Mini episode 63 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Outside the Box Score, your home on the web for entertaining sports columns and videos. Follow them on the web at outsidetheboxscore.blogspot.com.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, welcome to mini episode number 63 of the FDH Lounge. Actually, this can be called a joint mini episode of the FDH Lounge and Sportsology, not merely because it's on Sportsology's platform. More about that in a second. Hi, this is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. I'm going to be joined in a second by my good friend who's actually hosting this here on this platform, Russ Cohen of Sportsology. And as I say, this is going to feel probably more like an FDH Lounge mini episode, although it's a joint one. But if it's going to have more flavor one way or another, I'd say that it's going to have flavor more so of the FDH Lounge, because we will be directing the questions at my good friend Russ Cohen, who will be joining us here momentarily. He will be joining us to discuss everything with the Winter Classic. He was at the Winter Classic this past Monday, and he'll be giving us his impressions of everything that that went down at the Classic. And I think we've got him on the line, so we'll go to him now. Our good pal, Russ Cohen from Citizens Bank Park in Philly. How you doing tonight, Russ?
Good, Rick. Sorry about that. I had to reboot my phone. I dialed, and it just wasn't working, so I'm back.
Okay, no problem. I can break kayfabe now and indicate that I was texting you the number here as I was multitasking. I wasn't quite sure what it was. I'm very relieved to have you on and glad to have you there. Before we get to it for looking back at Monday, I guess we got another event coming up there tonight, an AHL one. That's what you're there to cover?
That's what I'm here to cover. It's the Hershey Bears against the Phantoms, and it's pretty tremendous. Right now we're here in the press box, and the windows are open. It is that warm. It was 50-something degrees today, and it still feels like it's about 45, and the windows are open, man. It's like it's baseball season, and we're watching hockey. It couldn't be any better.
See, pretty similar here, talking to you from the FDH headquarters city of Cleveland.
Yes.
Climate-wise, yeah, not a surprise. You got about the same thing I do. Now, that begs the obvious question. Is this going to be like NHL, is Stanley Cup playoff hockey in May? I mean, what's the ice going to be like for something like this?
Well, I'm looking at it, and it looks okay. Really, the test will be after the first period. But again, I try to tell people pregame, they played this in Vegas in the 90s at night, and that was still probably more humid, warmer than what it is right now this moment. It is expected to go down to 35. So I don't think there's going to be any real issues at all. And they just had a public skate just get done with session about 10, 15 minutes ago. So I think they're going to be fine. You know, right now the ice, they're looking it over right now, and I don't really see any issues. It looks pretty nice.
Yeah, good call on the Vegas thing. Yeah, I mean, if they could make that work, really anything by comparison should be feasible. It's very interesting. I was talking to our mutual friend off-air today, our senior producer, Steve Cervillo. I was telling him, we've got this Ohio State-Michigan game coming up, and I still call it Jacobs Field, I guess officially now it's Progressive Park or whatever, a week from Sunday, and it's very interesting. They've been doing the whole winter festival thing there. There was a high school game, I guess, this week between Lakewood and St. Ignatius, two of the big powers in this area. So that really seems to be a trend, doesn't it, that try to milk more than one thing out of it when you set up the ice at one of these venues?
Yeah, well, I mean, from my understanding, it's about $20,000 a day cost to run the rink. So it's in their best interest to have as many events as possible and feasible and try and bring in some other revenue, because while you're making money on the game, you don't want to start giving some of it back after the game is over. So I think it's smart that you could do this. And one of the big reasons that baseball has been so friendly with this is that, well, let's say this was football and let's say the Eagles were in the playoffs. Well, then you wouldn't be able to overlap this many events. You'd really just be able to have the game and you'd have to be out, because if they were on the road, they need their field back to, you know, be ready for the playoffs. So So that's something where there's a little bit of a stumbling block with the NHL, and that's why they've had good luck with MLB parks.
Well, you know what? On the subject of venues, let's steer it to that. Now that the question of the ratings came out, as we start to segue into talking about the game itself,
I haven't seen the ratings, so you were down a tad from
the last couple of years, and there was a little bit of speculation I was reading on Puck Daddy that it might have had something to do with the fact that, unlike at least some of the past ones here, nothing really historic about this venue. I mean, all the ones in Philly are pretty new, so you were going to have that even if it ended up being Lincoln Financial. But, no Fenway, no Wrigley. Could that have possibly had anything to do with it? I mean, you had it in Pittsburgh, granted, at a new facility, but you also had the league hyping across, Benjamin. So. Was it the absence of some of these other kinds of things, or the absence of Crosby and Ovechkin, the absence of a national team like the Red Wings? What do you think might have accounted for that?
I think for the slight dip, maybe what accounted is the day. I still think New Year's Day is better than the 2nd. And I think maybe the fact that it was on the 2nd, some people did go back to work. Not everybody. It's a federal holiday. But some do. And I think where on New Year's Day, nobody is working.
Interesting. Okay. I hadn't heard that accounted for as an opinion. But, again, as I mentioned in the setup, you've been at all the Winter Classics, the Heritage Classic.
The original Heritage one,
2003 in Edmonton. So, again, this in a lot of ways, I can see this thing seems to get bigger and better every year, a lot of the festival-type things that are accompanying it. I know selfishly for you, it worked very well because you didn't have to travel for this one. It was right in your backyard. Every year you used to having to travel around this kind of year.
20 minutes.
What were your impressions of this relative to the last couple of years?
It was great. Not because of me. Just taking me out of it and my little 20-minute trip, it's fantastic because the city is a very good sports city. We do know that. You know, there was that issue with the fans and the beating, and really that could happen in any city. So I don't want to really pin that on Philadelphia because I've seen plenty of stuff when I lived in New York. So I'll leave that part alone and say that that probably could happen anywhere. But the atmosphere was great. These fans always pack the house. They're always passionate. The buzz was really good. It had at least been talked about on regular radio where that's sometimes a problem in some other cities. There was an anticipation for it. I felt like the game delivered. Were there some bad calls at the end? Yeah, I think so. I think the officiating was a little suspect at times during the game and at the end. But all that said, it didn't really affect the end result, which is all that you really care about. And it was a close game, and the penalty shot was exciting. So it was the first penalty shot we'd ever seen in Winter Classic history. So I think there were some real positives to take out of that game, and I think fans will have a lasting impression of it because I think you got some tremendous goaltending out of Henrik Lundqvist. I think, not to say Bob was bad, but Lundqvist was just spectacular. And really, that's as good as you could be outdoors. I don't know if we'll ever see like an outdoor shutout based on the weird bounces and other things that could happen. It really wreaks havoc on goalies. And I thought Lundqvist played as well as any goalie I've ever seen on the outdoor surface. And I wasn't sure if his pedigree was really going to matter all that much because sometimes the ice can be the greatest neutralizer.
Yeah, that's true. But he was more than equal to the occasion, and for a Hall of Fame career that he has been busy fashioning the last couple of years, clearly this is going to go down as one of his greatest seasons, and that's saying something. But in terms of this game itself, when it was announced, my first thought was, wow, this is the Russ Cohen Bowl. You know, you've got that, 'cause you're covering the Flyers all the time, based on where you're at there. Also, co-author of 100 Ranger Greats, so your familiarity with these two teams, just that was the first thing I thought of in my mind. So capitalizing on your knowledge of these teams and the way that you follow them, I want to start by asking you about the Rangers, because the last couple of years, I mean, the league always tries to get top contenders in this game, so sometimes you see some threads that play out later in the season, like when Philly and Boston played 2 years ago. In terms of looking at this, the Rangers, they actually topped our FPH power rankings the last time we did them here beginning of January. It has been a really amazing run for this. Got guys like Callahan and Delgado stepping up. So how does something like this game fit into the thread of this season? This is a season that it worked Brad Richards into it. I know that they had some real high expectations, but How does a game like this fit into the threat of a season that the Rangers clearly are hoping is a breakthrough?
Well, I think it's just been sort of incremental for them. They hadn't lost more than two games at any point this year in a row. So I think right now they're being looked at as one of the best teams, and I think the Flyers have been looked at as one of the best teams for a number of years. So I think based on their interdivisional rivalry and the fact that there's only 4 points separating them, or was it six after last night? I can't remember. But the Flyers won too, so it is four. So four separating them. I think you look at it and you say, okay, 2 points is very important because 2 points is what separated the playoffs for these two teams just a couple of years ago. So it came down to the shootout, and the Rangers went home and the Flyers advanced, and they actually made it to the Stanley Cup. So that shows the importance of 2 points, and every player, every fan, everybody was keenly aware of that. And I think that's a really big point because we always used to sort of look at that as a cliche, but as the league has gotten tighter and things have tightened up in this league, you can now see where that's become something that's very important.
Clearly, definitely, and it's been quite a rivalry between them the last couple of years. And as you said, that play-in game that they had really symbolizes this like nothing else. But between Richards coming on board this year, Gaborik being in there, I remember that the Gaborik signing was a little controversial when it happened because of the price tag and because of his injury history. But I remember saying at the time that if the guy holds up, it's going to be a tremendous bargain, and that's been an on-and-off thing since he signed the deal, probably not surprisingly. But he's been good to go this year, and obviously that has to have played a huge part in this. You know, some nice play on the blue line also. Lundqvist having one of his best years yet, but Gaborik has just shown everybody that when he's 100%, that money's well worth it, isn't it?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I still think there's some shortcomings in his game, and I even think that the that John Tortorella sees that, and at times, people can just look at the numbers and see the amount of goals, the 23 goals, and say, wow, he's just having a fantastic season. But Tortorella, looks for more than that, and so do I. And he's had quite a few tack-on goals this year, so lately he has been scoring more clutch goals. Last night, was a great one for him in overtime. So I think he's starting to work on that part and a little bit of the overall part of his game, because at times he could have been looked at a bit as a, not as a cherry picker, but something close to that. And I think the Rangers are really doing their best to get him to round out his game, and I think we're starting to see that. So, yeah, his resurrection has had a lot to do with Brad Richards, and has had a lot to do with just the overall team. They have a great team unity going on there that I don't see in every locker room that I go into, and it's the strongest that they've had in quite some years.
I was going to say, that even going back to the late 90s, when the free agency period was really a buck, and the chemistry was probably at rock bottom, although the talent was really great. Chemistry is not a word we've heard associated with the league. How much of that has come about this year, and how much of it has been gradual over the last year or two?
Well, it's been gradual over the last year or two with the amount of youngsters that they've been able to bring up through the system. And then you look at making Ryan Callahan the captain, and that's a pretty big deal too. I mean, once you made Ryan Callahan the captain, then you've made a statement. Okay, not only if you work hard, you can make the Rangers and play there, but you could actually be the captain. And I think that was a strong statement to make. And there were a lot of guys that were starting to follow Callahan as early as last year. So it's natural now that they've got a little boost from that. This guy is a tremendous hard worker, as you know. He also can put the puck in the net, which helps. So you have that, and then you have other players like Dubinsky, and they've brought up Carl Hagelin this year, and Dan Girardi has been with them for a long time as an undrafted free agent. And so now all of a sudden, Lundqvist, you have quite a few players that they've brought up from within, and that's a pretty big deal. So as a young player, you look at that, and you can't wait to get there, because now all of a sudden you can make it and you can stick. Where in the past, you might get traded, you might get bounced up and down. They're very good at not doing that as much anymore, and they've done a real good job at it.
How convincing is the case, Russ, in terms of teams like that, the traditional powers of the East here, be it Boston, be it Philly, Pittsburgh, Washington. I know Washington's been more of a playoff paper tiger, but they're always at the top of the heap going in. How convincing is the case that the Rangers have made to you thus far? They can push through that.
Well, they've made a pretty good case. I still think they have some deficiencies. They don't really have a true power play quarterback. They don't have a true face-off sniper. But those are really the only things they're missing. They've been able to rotate in a lot of different defensemen during the year, and Henrik Lundqvist continues to be their best penalty killer, as the goalie should be, and really a stalwart and having his best season. So for as long as that goes, they're going to be competitive. Now, if they were able to pick up somebody on the power play, then that could possibly propel them to the very top of the league. We'll see if that happens. If not, I'm sure they're going to go at least two rounds, but I don't know if they'll go anything more than that based on what they have now. It's always a big difference between now and what we see, who's playing, who's healthy, and all that at the deadline. So that's going to be real important to watch.
Absolutely. No question about that. In terms of Philadelphia, it's very unusual when you get to a game like this, a big game that everybody's been pointing to, and there ends up being a goalie change, because this is not just one game out of 82. It certainly seems symbolic and emblematic of that much more. So when Sergei ended up with the ball in goal there in favor of Brisbane, what did that tell you about how things have been going for Philadelphia this year and what they're looking to do the last couple of months in goal?
Well, what that told me was that the coach wanted Brisbane to take a look at things from the bench. He didn't, even though this was a marquee game and most people expected him to be in net, me included, even though if this were another just plain old regular season game, Bobrovsky would have gotten the start because that was sort of the progression that he was on. Taking all those things into account, I think they made the right move. I'm not telling you Brizgalov had a great game yesterday. He didn't. Team won. And I'm not going to tell you he's a lockdown goalie because he's really never been that. I think he's a guy that will always give up two or three or sometimes four goals. And you have to sometimes make sure you're scoring enough to do that. The Flyers have a lot of scoring, so I think they can do that. And as I wrote about a week ago, I do think this guy could salvage a season. But mentally, he has to be in the right spot. And yesterday, he didn't want to talk to the media. So now, today, he said, hey, that's my right. And if I don't want to, you know, go to the Supreme Court again in traditional, you know, Brizgalov form, he gives you one of those Brizgalovisms, I guess you can call it. But look, he's never played in a market like this that's been this rabid for hockey and had this much pressure. So I think it's a situation where he has to sort of figure out how to do that and what his comfort zone is with that. And then he also has to figure out how to lock down his game a bit more, because that part is still lacking, and it was still lacking a bit yesterday.
Well, in terms of the kind of season that he's having there, and again, I'm not encouraging 2020 hindsight on anybody's part, but when you look at what he's given them versus goalies the last couple of years, when you look at the offense where a guy like Claude Giroux is having possibly a heart trophy caliber season, it does seem real easy to look at this and project and say, gee, what if they still had Richards and Carter and they had made those mega trades over the summer to free up the salary? So, you know, is that unfair 2020 hindsight, or is that legitimate to look at based on the play of Brisgalov so far?
No, I mean, it's all legitimate to look at. I think you have to look at everything and see what they did. And they, you know, to me, they improved themselves for the future. To me, they managed to stay competitive for today. They did get younger. We know they got younger, so there's going to be a little bit of a curve there, and you don't know how long that will last. So I think that's what they're sort of struggling with the up and downs. And then with the goaltender position, look, they wanted to invest in a top-flight goalie because they weren't sure what they had in Bobrovsky. But to their credit, they didn't get rid of Bobrovsky either. And so that had to have told you something where, hey, we're signing this guy, and yes, we're signing him to really good money, but we're holding on to this guy too, just in case, based on our history.
Well, for something like this, clearly it's a move made with one eye looking at the future, as you said, because they're getting younger, and then one move to try to obviously stay competitive for the time being, have some better goaltending, even if it's at the expense of a little bit of short-term offense for this year and maybe even the next year. How accepting have Philly fans been of this trade-off and understanding of what the Flyers had to do to improve themselves?
They were really understanding. Like, they're a very understanding group, and look, they haven't won since the 70s, so I think once that happens, you know, you become a little more understanding at times, and then at times you become a little more frustrated, like when you see bad goaltending. So I think they were okay with the moves, because I think they knew that you know, Jeff Carter was underachieving here, and he's still underachieving if you look at his numbers in Columbus. So he's a guy that sort of has not really been able to stay at his potential for more than a year or two. So that's something where that's in question. Mike Richards was never really in question, but sort of grew tired of the Philly media, definitely needed a change of scenery. He's doing well in L.A., but having some concussion issues, as you saw earlier. So we couldn't predict that. So I don't think you could really say much about that other than, hey, Flyers made some good moves. They didn't ruin their chemistry. They may have improved it, and that's what the hope was, that they might have improved it. And in the long run, they're in good shape. And right now, you know, Ed Schneider will tell you, hey, they're right near the top, which they are, so they don't have a goalie issue. I will tell you, they do have a goalie issue until Bruce Gallup can play for a couple of weeks flawlessly and Bobrovsky doesn't even sniff the ice. Until that happens, there's going to be a slight issue here, and it's been growing. And even that win yesterday didn't totally defuse it. So there's going to be an eye on that for a while, and it might last till April.
Yeah, well, as far as the goaltending goes, to paraphrase Rick Pitino, Bernie Parent is not walking through that door anytime soon, so got to make the best of what they got. In the time remaining here, Russ, I know there's always some good things going on with Sportsology. Of course, people have been able to follow your coverage all week from the Winter Classic, from the Phantoms game here tonight. What are some other things that the folks out there should know about that you guys got coming up on Sportsology?
Well, the NHL All-Star game, I'm going to be heading to Ottawa in a couple of weeks, and that'll be pretty big. I'm going to take in a game with the Sarnia Sting against the Ottawa 67, so I could see Nail Yakupov in person, and even though I watched him in the World Juniors and he looked great, I may not be able to see him in person now because he was just carted off yesterday after that game with a meniscus injury, so I may not get to see him. We'll see how that plays out, but maybe I'll see him, maybe I won't, but I'll take in the junior game, I'll take in the All-Star game. That'll be a lot of fun, and then we'll go from there. Right now the players are getting ready to take the ice here, and we're going to hear some cheers, and this is fun. This is like, I love the outdoor hockey. Like, I can't get enough of it.
That's tremendous. Hey, if you decide you want to hit the one in Cleveland in a week and a half, let me know.
I'll let you know, Rick. I think I'm good for now, and I'm actually passing on the AHL's other one, which is going to be their premier event, which will be in Hamilton. They're going to play with the Tiger Cats play in the CFL, and they're going to play the Marlies. So that's going to be pretty amazing.
That is going to be. And I know you love to watch it and cover it, and we love to track it all. So, Russ, thanks a lot for being on here tonight. Again, as I said at the top, got a joint FDH Lounge and Sportsology here on your platform. We appreciate it, as always. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, Rick.
All right, Russ. Take care. That ends FDH Lounge / Sportsology, mini episode number 63. Stay tuned next week, the fifth anniversary of the FDH Lounge.